Hey, this is the third episode of the Rad Wagon Podcast. My name's Tim, and with me today are Mike, Miles, and Justin.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it going, guys? Unfortunately, Matt couldn't be with us today. He's busy with other things. But we have quite a bit of stuff to discuss today, don't we?
Looks like it.
Yeah. So, what's everyone been up to lately?
Basically preparing and stuff for Anthem being out, and basically just doing that and Destiny for at least this week.
Nice. What are your first impressions of Anthem so far?
So I'm gonna avoid being too controversial on purpose. I have a lot of strong opinions on that, but I think the core gameplay is fine. It's enjoyable, at least to me. I enjoy the gameplay loop that it is at launch. I think there's a lot of potential there, and I'm hoping that it gets iterated on in a positive way. One thing I'll want to remind most people of, like, there's the comparisons to, like, Destiny and Division and stuff, and those games launched terribly. Like, those games were basically laughed at for about a year or so before, patches and expansions made them looked at as pretty good. I get people not wanting to wait a year for a game to be good, but with these types of games, you gotta get that stuff out there first before you can start fixing things. It's kind of a unfortunate reality.
Remember, this is BioWare.
Yeah,
I know. But this is also the first time that they've done something like this, kind of.
That's what I meant. Like, they're more experienced in other areas.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely some elements of, like, Mass Effect Andromeda in it that I can appreciate. There's essentially, there's a lot of potential there. So that's just my two cents. It's just my personal opinion on it. I enjoy it. It's not going to be for everyone, and I get that, but that's just my two cents at least.
Yeah, Matt was telling me about this last night. He basically said that he wants to love it because at its core, it's something that he would really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
But he is running into too many technical issues with, like, servers and everything.
And a lot
to
of
really
them
say he can actually enjoy it just yet.
A lot of that stuff is server side, and to be fair, right, they did improve a lot of that stuff from the demos for people that pre-ordered it. The fact that a lot of that stuff is server side means that they can address that stuff pretty quickly, and from the looks of things, they're wanting to address stuff like that quickly. So
that's good.
I'm more willing to cut developers slack when they openly say, hey, this stuff is on our end, we're gonna keep, working on it, and you actually see, from a week-to-week basis, things improve. So it's a good start, at least to me, so I'm hoping that continues.
Like, they're at least trying.
Yeah, like, you want to do the best that you can. Like, you want people to enjoy you want people to, like, enjoy and play stuff and have fun with it, because no one wants to just, put out something that people hate.
Right. Mike, what have you been up to?
Same old, same old.
Overwatch.
Overwatch, and more Overwatch.
Yeah, I've been meaning to get to some of the shows that I've had in my Netflix queue, forever, and also my Plex queue. Yeah.
Well, you and I did play a little bit of Apex more recently.
Yes, I've been playing that a little bit more often too, now that I kind of know what I'm doing now.
That has turned out to be a pretty fun game. I'm liking it.
Yep.
I feel like for you, Mike, that's actually kind of saying something, since you bounced off pretty hard of, like, PUBG and other Battle Royale games.
Well, it helps, I think. Well, one, obviously the MOBA aspects and the abilities, but I think also it's because of the developer. They had a very tight game mechanic in Titanfall, Just like the gameplay is really tight and snappy. And so that helped a lot. It comparing it to PUBG, which is like hurts my eyes sometimes with some of the visual effects, or not the effects, but the just the visuals. This looks like a really polished version of PUBG.
Right. Yeah.
And it doesn't require building.
Yeah.
It's actually optimized and runs well. Yeah, it's really fun. Like, I've been digging the hell out of it personally.
There's a guy at work that it's become kind of a joke around the office how many times in a day he'll mention to us, like the rest of the help desk, to play Apex. And like, I like the way it's designed, kind of the same as Fortnite. Like, I like the work that gets put into it, to put it one way. I just, it's not my cup of tea.
Right. You never seemed like battle royales really appealed to you.
No, and I gave like Fortnite and stuff a fair shake, to where I could say like, okay, I don't see myself playing this consistently.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
I've been playing like so much Tetris 99, man.
I don't understand how Tetris needed to be, or why Tetris needed to be, a battle royale game.
It didn't need to be, but man, is it fun. It is the craziest, most intense, fun thing I've ever played. I finally got my first win last night, so I'm real stoked about that. Real fun. If you have Switch Online, it's a free download. I highly recommend it. It's crazy fun.
I might give it a shot, but I can't guarantee anything.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a free download, and if you're
come get your free download, Jim.
Yes.
It's a free download. 2 line blocks, no rugs.
Miles, what about you, man? How you been?
Good. Finished my Game of Thrones rewatch with my wife.
Yeah, I'm still doing that.
She asked me why I did this to her. And also saw Umbrella Academy. That was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, how was that?
It was surprisingly really good. It's hard to say what I liked about it without spoiling anything, but it's very different from like anything else superhero related that I've ever seen. So,
can you give us like a brief rundown of what it is and what it's about for those of us who don't really know?
Even that's kind of tough. I guess the basic premise of it is these children are born one day, and except their mothers were not pregnant when they woke up that morning, so there's all these children that exist, and then this one guy goes around trying to adopt as many as he can, and he adopts 7 of them and forms what he calls the Umbrella Academy. And basically all these children have superpowers.
I think there's a story in the Bible about that.
I have not heard that one, but okay. but then it fast forwards to like, I don't even know, like 30 years later or something like that, and the guy dies, but now all the children are back together for the funeral, and apparently the apocalypse is going to happen. I really can't say much more than that without spoiling it.
Okay.
But it's fun. The music is fantastic. And,
And that's a Netflix original, right?
Yeah. I think it's based on a comic book, too.
Yeah, it is. I believe it's based on the comic book by Gerard Way, the singer of My Chemical Romance.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he got into comic making a while back.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I've heard good things about the comic. I just never read it. I might check out the show, though. Looks really interesting. Other than that, I've been also watching Game of Thrones. I just finished season 5 the other night and I'm going to start season 6. Other than that, yeah, not much. Just Tetris 99, man. And Kingdom Hearts. We're still slowly working my way through that.
I've
been neglecting it.
Yeah, I have too. Like, I keep getting sidetracked by other stuff that's either coming out or that I want to do.
There's just a lot that happened that came out recently, so it's just like, oh, new things.
Yeah, basically. Like, new shiny things, and then that's it.
Yeah,
exactly. I'll finish it at some point.
Mm-hmm. So, shall we move on to news?
Sure.
Boy, this has been a very jam-packed couple of weeks. We have a lot of news coming out. We got the Nintendo Direct happened.
Yeah, wasn't Tetris 99 announced at that?
Yeah, it was announced and launched same day. Like, there's been a lot of, like, these stealth releases that have just been big lately. This, in Apex, for example.
Yeah. There wasn't a lot of fanfare for it.
Yeah. But then, Super Mario Maker is getting a sequel on Switch now, too, which is awesome. Can't wait for that.
I never really got into Super Mario Maker. Like, I never got into, like, the map-making stuff, like Forge and Halo or, like, stuff like that.
Did you even have a Wii U?
I did for a little bit.
Oh.
But I think it was actually, I had it a little bit before I met and started hanging out with you guys, or at least to the extent that I do now.
Okay. But
even then, it wasn't like I was super into it. Like, I like seeing what people make with that stuff, because it's cool to see, but...
Oh, for sure. Like, I'll be down to play some of those levels. I don't know if I'll get as into the map-making part of it.
Just because,
like you, I was never huge on it.
Right.
But, yeah, it's something I'd still want to play. I never had a Wii U, but it was one of the few things that made me consider getting a Wii U. And then, there was the new Zelda Link's Awakening remake.
Yeah, I have...
That looks super cool.
I can't wait to play that. I've either seen people really complain about the art style or really not care and just are so focused on the fact that it's Link's Awakening as a remake.
I actually really dig the art style. I think it looks great.
Yeah.
That 2.5D art style.
Yeah, because
I think it really works for something like
this. It's sort of a callback to the way the original game was, to a slight degree.
What platform was that on again?
The original?
The original? Yeah.
Oh, I can't remember
if it was... That was Game Boy, right?
Link's Awakening? I can't remember if it was a NES or SNES title.
Platforms... Game Boy, yeah. It was originally a Game Boy. Yeah.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, so... That's crazy that they're remaking that.
I like that. I feel like they could mine a lot of the older Zelda games to do remakes like that.
Probably.
Totally.
This one might interest you. The new Fire Emblem announced.
Oh yeah, I saw that. I actually have been meaning to look up like details on it, but it's a Fire Emblem game, and it's called Fire Emblem Three Houses. Yes. It's a Fire Emblem game, and if they follow the same formula that they've been doing, like with the 3DS games that they've put out before, then I'll enjoy this one as much as I did the previous ones.
Okay. And I've never actually played any of them, so I can't say if they're any good or not.
I like them. I'll
give them that. They seem to have a hell of a following.
They do. A lot of it is the character development within it. Like the interpersonal relations between people that you have. And there's like the hardcore aspect of it too, if you end up liking that, where like you need to be on your shit or else people die and they don't come back.
Right. Okay. A few other things that came out of that. A lot of remakes and stuff getting announced. Like Hellblade's coming to the Switch, Final Fantasy IX, Yoshi's Crafted World, that looks interesting. Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3 is coming to Switch.
Is it?
This summer.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
So, I had seen a lot of the ports for, like, the Final Fantasy games that they're bringing. 9 I actually never played completely, but they're porting, I want to say it was either the mobile or the PC version of it, including all the random bugs and like text stuff that it had, like the text glitches and stuff. So kind of on that, but yeah. Having a new Marvel game, we haven't had one for a while, like a long time.
No, we haven't. Like, other than that, there's just that Avengers game that's supposed to still happen.
At some
that's
point,
really it.
Maybe.
Yeah. But yeah, that lot of stuff announced. We haven't really covered all of it here. There's a whole lot more.
Oh yeah, there's still some stuff that I'm waiting for more details to come out.
Right. Yeah, I think everyone's waiting for more details on a lot of stuff. There were rumors of like Metroid Prime remakes coming out on the Switch that didn't get announced. A few other things as well.
Yeah, I would like remakes on the Switch for Metroid Prime, just because I feel like it'd be a good game to port to it.
Right. Yeah, and man, more depressing news. Reggie's retiring from Nintendo of America.
Yeah, I had seen that the other day. Most of the people like on help desk at work were like inconsolable about that. And the funny part of that, at least to me, was that Bowser is taking over his head.
Doug Bowser will be taking over as president of Nintendo of America now. How long was Reggie in that role for?
A long time. I don't even remember. He made those... He really brought up Nintendo of America. Like, it did really well under him.
Yeah, he's been very hands-on. He seemed like he always loved his job and loved what he was doing.
Yeah, and I think in this industry, you don't see that enough. Like,
you really don't. You don't. Especially from heads of big companies like that.
Yeah.
You really don't. So that's it sucks that he's going, but if he feels it's time, then it's time. You know, he's in good health. He's still got a lot of life left in him. He's ready to retire and move on. Do whatever comes next.
That's kind of his choice at that point.
And hey, good on him. Like, he's able to do that. Go out while he still loves it, so not everyone gets to do that.
That's true. I would agree with that.
Yeah. Best of luck to Doug Bowser. For those he's got some big shoes to fill.
Yeah, like he's gonna have a lot of eyes on him watching how he does that.
And how fitting is it that the guy's name is Doug Bowser?
Yeah.
He's gonna be president of Nintendo of America.
The memes that came out.
Oh man, the memes.
Jeez.
Like, I love that. What in the tweet Reggie put out on the Nintendo Twitter, he literally said, "And my body is still ready." it's so good.
Hopefully we'll have those same level of jokes.
Yeah. So this next one will definitely interest me and Mike more.
Probably.
It's the new Rocket League update. They released the Friends. It's called the Friends update, and it's the big thing is cross-platform parties. You can now party up with people on any other platform, regardless of where you play. Oh, that's huge!
Yes,
it gives you what's called a Rocket ID that'll be generated when you log in for the first time after the update, and you add friends within Rocket League. Sorry, you add friends within Rocket League. By their Rocket ID.
Nice.
Oh yeah, that's huge. People have been asking this for so long.
I mean, a lot of that comes from the resistance from Sony. Like that's kind of a springboard into how, I guess, anti-cross-platform Sony is when it comes to stuff.
Which is weird because they were the first one that actually was cross-platform with PC on that game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird that they didn't want to do that, I think.
That's not even just with that. It's with, like, most games. And for some, I understand. But others, it's like people want there to be cross-platform for this, and there's no reason for it there not to be.
There really isn't. It doesn't... Apart from maybe higher FPS on PC, there's no real inherent advantage.
Right.
On any platform.
Well, for that game, anyway.
Right. Like, I've tried it on PC. I put in like 500 hours or something on PC, and then I also tried it on Switch, and I could not play it on Switch as well. Like, even with all my settings the same, like FOV the same.
Yeah.
So, fun little side note, FOV is a fucking game changer in Rocket League. Like, if you're playing Rocket League, max out your FOV. It'll change your life. I'm not even kidding. I started playing it on Switch a little bit, and I was like, why am I doing so terribly? Like, I can't hit the ball at all. And then I looked at my FOV, I'm like, oh, my FOV is way lower than it is on PC. Let me change that. Instant. Bam. Instant change. But even then, like, because the Switch version plays at, like, 30 FPS, it's... It is, like, a notable difference. Like, I don't do quite as well on that. It could be a control thing, maybe. I don't know.
I would venture more of a control thing, because FPS for a game like that doesn't exactly matter as much.
Yeah.
Right. Well, maybe... I feel like, for me, it kind of does, just because I'm in the extreme end of that. I play at 144 FPS on PC. So dropping down to 30 FPS is a pretty big difference.
Yeah.
That sounds like a you problem.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah, it's 100% a me problem, but it doesn't mean that problem isn't there for me.
I think it's a human problem. It's just the visual system, man. The worst is I'm playing a game on PC at 144, and then it skips to a cutscene that's at 30. It's just like, bam, slideshow.
Yeah, it's very jarring.
Okay, that I agree with.
But who do we know that has a copy of Rocket League on PS4 that we were going to play with?
Miles.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was you. I thought there was somebody else though.
I don't know.
Is it like Eve or someone? No.
Maybe.
I don't know.
No, Eve doesn't like Rocket League. Yeah. It'll be...
Unfortunately.
Yeah. It'll be a nice addition.
Yeah, for sure. We should try that after this.
Is it available yet?
Yeah, the update's out, Miles.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, we can do that like right after we get finished recording this if we want.
I thought it was still coming, but...
No, it came out on the 19th.
Oh, wow. Sweet.
Yeah. Another little interesting change that they added is Curveball Mutator in Rocket League.
Interesting.
So now in local private matches and tournaments that you can actually change it to where the ball has curve depending on the trajectory and how it's hit and the spin.
Nice.
So like an actual baseball or soccer ball.
Yeah.
I guess.
Oh, yeah. It's really, really cool.
So a ball that's getting actually hit by...
Vroom. Hello.
Yes.
Settle down, Justin.
I wanted to rev my engine to impress the ladies.
Are we adding sound effects now to the podcast?
It was just really well timed.
Justin got really excited.
I did.
About curveballs.
I don't know, man. Those curveballs, they just get me going.
You love that in-game physics. But yeah, that's more or less it with Rocket League there.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to the big gaming news?
Yeah.
Fucking Activision Blizzard layoffs. Oh yeah. This one was a doozy.
This is a fucking big sigh.
Yeah. They cut around 8% of the staff, and as of last year Activision Blizzard had roughly 9,600 employees, which means nearly 800 people now out of work.
to expound on that a little bit, I don't remember if it's Activision, if it's Blizzard specifically, or if it's Activision as a publishing company.
It's everything.
Yeah. So that 8% translates to roughly 800 or so people, which is a lot of people to be just laid off. And a lot of those were, a good number of them were international employees.
Yeah, there are some people that didn't find out until the next day just because they're not in the same time zone.
Yeah, and I think that's really unfortunate. Like, they had a banner year. They even said, like, in their earnings call, like, we had a really successful year.
This was their most successful year to date. They made record profits this past year.
Yeah, so then their response is to cut people.
But because it didn't meet the projections that they had set, which is, to me, that sounds insane.
That doesn't make sense to me, because, like, how do you have a record year that doesn't meet expectations? Like,
they were expecting it to do a lot better.
They wanted all the money.
Yes, they wanted more money, Justin.
That, and as I have several side notes on that, and I think that Tim knows what they are, along with that, like, and this is like an industry thing more than an Activision thing, but NCSoft, the company behind ArenaNet, who does Guild Wars 2, also announced sweeping layoffs to restructure that entire developer. The large part of those were, you know, people that were working on projects that, you know, weren't going to see a release or stuff like that, to like restructure them, but it's still kind of shitty that they laid a good chunk of people off.
Yeah.
And as far as the whole Activision making money thing, that's a lot of people suspect that fueled why Bungie wanted to leave Activision.
Right. Yeah, I can see that.
And
so, sorry, go ahead.
So they a lot of it was, like, even from Activision's point of view, a lot of the IPs that they have, they own. So, like, right. Call of Duty, you know, all the other games and stuff that they own those IPs, so they can do what they want with them, and they do.
Right.
They don't own the Destiny IP, Bungie does. So, a lot of the shenanigans involving, like, microtransaction stuff for, you know, certain events, like, throughout the year, that wasn't Bungie doing that or making that decision. That was Activision pushing Destiny to be a cash cow. That sounds
100% like a business decision, because they see that, oh, look at all these other games making all this money off of microtransactions. Let's have that in the game.
And to be fair, they had that in Destiny 1 too, but they were, you know, it was optional and it wasn't tied to seasonal stuff, or it wasn't as egregious as it was here.
Right.
So, but with that departure, Bungie also loses access to a lot of the other smaller development studios that they were using to make stuff. Like, they lost access to High Noon Studios, they lost access to Vicarious Visions. So those were the developers that were doing a lot of the extra stuff. Like, they did a lot of legwork with Forsaken, they did a lot of legwork with a lot of the Season Pass stuff. So now it's just Bungie at this point.
Right.
And it kind of like, okay, we need to see what's going to happen next. But it was more or less Activision's, like, overarching greed that pushed them to make that decision.
Right. So what I'm seeing based on some of these articles from Kotaku is that more or less the Activision wants to make more games for cheaper. So what they're doing to accomplish that is laying off from departments that aren't developers. So
right. The
big cuts from marketing departments, from QA departments, from IT departments even, and customer service.
I'm wondering how they're going to, you know, bug test all their games and fix their machines if they don't have IT or QA.
Yeah. But yeah, that seems to be the big thing, is they want to make more games for cheaper.
I mean, I get that. Like, games have become way more complicated than they were, like, when we were growing up. but, you know, they take longer to make, they're more expensive to make, and the price of a new game, about $60, hasn't really changed in, like, what, a decade?
Right.
Like, since the price increased to $60, it hasn't changed. But games continue to be more and more expensive to make. Which is why you see stuff like microtransactions and loot boxes and stuff, because they need an additional source of income.
Or the premium edition for $90.
Yeah, that stuff.
Personally, I wouldn't mind seeing games go, like, just your base game charging $70, maybe $80 for that, just because it's expensive to make video games.
And I think a lot of people don't understand that fact. Like, that's something that you would know if, you know, you started looking into the industry side of things. You're like, oh shit, this is really expensive. Like, even just
right.
licensing the engine to make the game at all is super expensive. Mm-hmm. So I don't begrudge developers for wanting additional ways to make money off of a game, but I do have a problem is where the practices are like super predatory. You can look at the way EA handles the FIFA franchise now, to where you can't even play that game without spending additional money on it to get players.
Right. Yeah. Fucking 800 people, man. That's crazy.
It's a super shitty situation.
So according to this article, one Blizzard employee told the author, quote, "It's a bloodbath here.
Yeah.
A lot more cuts than we were expecting." Another employee said, "The look on people's faces as they're pulling in through the campus gates is just awful. This is the fucking worst."
Well, so, you don't know if you're going to be on the chopping block. Like, I wouldn't want to go into work thinking, like, oh man, am I going to leave today with a job still?
Yeah, it sucks because, like, I mean, I guess if you're on the developer team, you're probably fine. That seems to be not what they're looking to cut.
Yeah, but then still, it's like, what if, right? Like, you know, mm-hmm. what if these cuts aren't enough and, you know, they start needing to downsize further? Like, if they were willing to lay off 8% of their entire staff, like, what's to say they wouldn't do that to the developer side of it, too?
I think the main thing is because they just want to develop, like, they want to put an emphasis on development.
I guess.
That was a big part of this.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but at the same time, it's like, it still sucks.
Yeah.
It's still shitty.
Very shitty. Our best of luck to, you know, everyone who did lose the job. Hopefully they can find something new soon.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, yeah. And that's awful.
Mm-hmm.
Which this is really interesting. The AFL-CIO, which is the largest labor organization in America, put out an open letter to game developers as a result of the Activision Blizzard layoffs.
Yeah, that's the one calling for them to unionize, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's been a thing that's necessary for a long time, because in any other industry, like in any other, you know, company, whatever, if you were routinely expected to work more than, like, you know, more than 40 hours a week, like up, you know, 60, 70, 80 hours a week, and, you know, routinely slept at the office so that you could, you know, wake up and continue to do work. And not only that, but when you were finished with that project, if you didn't have another one, you didn't come in to work to do anything. Because if you don't have a game to develop, there's nothing for you to do. So I think that's been a call to unionize for a long time to stop shitty practices. And people are aware of those. People are aware of that stuff.
Like, the crunch time is the worst for these people.
Yeah.
And half the time, after that crunch, there's plenty of cases where people get laid off at the end of a game development because that's just what they were there for.
Yeah, like you were brought in to do this game. The game is done. We don't need you anymore.
Yeah, bye.
And that's the nature of contract work, and you should be aware of that when you start. But it doesn't make it it doesn't make it less of a shitty practice that there's not more consistent ways for people to work there. It really comes down to what the company's culture is. Like, if they have a culture of just using contract employees to cut down on costs, you're screwed.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that's all we have for video game news, at least. We have some light film news. Mainly Ben Affleck is officially out as Batman. He says, quote, "I couldn't crack it." So he went on Jimmy Kimmel Live to explain why he's stepping down. And he said, quote, "I tried to direct a version of it and worked with a really good screenwriter, but just couldn't come up with a version. I couldn't crack it, and so I thought it's time for someone else to take a shot at it. They got some really good people, so I'm excited." So more or less...
Do they say who they might be replacing him with?
No, there's all the rumors out there. There's nothing official yet now, so I'd rather not comment on what the rumors are until anything's official.
Right.
But yeah. It's a shame. I think he could have done a lot better given the right material to work with.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's not like he's a bad actor or anything.
No, and especially when it's something like he's directing and making, he's a great actor.
Right.
Like, I would have loved to have seen The Batman written and directed by Ben Affleck. I would have loved to see that version. I think he would have knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that would have been fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, there's something missing from the story that I mean, obviously said there's rumors that we're not going to get into, but...
Probably.
There's obviously stuff, a story missing here, and there's no way... Like, if you know, about Affleck's history with Batman, there's no way he'd want to do this. So...
Yeah. He's been on record that he's a pretty big fan of Batman. Like, he always wanted to do this.
Pretty sure he has his own Bat Cave. That's all Batman.
I wouldn't be surprised. So according to Deadline, the movie will now focus on a younger Bruce Wayne instead of Affleck's incarnation, which was like an older, more experienced, more cynical Batman.
So
they're going to go the opposite direction again now.
So optimistic Batman.
What they did with Wonder Woman then is.
I guess.
Back to a younger version.
Yeah, I guess. I think we should have someone... I don't know, do you guys want to see, like, an origin story or something, or no?
I mean, I think we've seen, like...
Yeah.
The origin story for Batman's been done and done and done pretty much to death. Like, it's like trying to do an origin story with Spider-Man, like...
Yeah.
It's...
Or Superman.
Like, we know at this point. To the point where you could maybe spend 5-10 minutes of a movie just on that, and no one would complain about missing details, because you know what it is already.
Yeah, I think they could easily just dive into him being a younger Batman, but still have already taken up the cape and cowl for a few years now.
Yeah, like, he's just kind of starting out, more or less.
Yeah.
I think it would be nice to see... there's a lot of in Batman vs. Superman, there's a lot of history that's hinted at, and maybe that there's a movie to be made from that. That's something I'd be curious about.
Yeah, there could be something there to explore.
I feel like that would be good. Like, it's not like there's a drought of content that they could, you know, that they can't plumb to figure out what to make a movie about.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much Batman content over the past, 50, 60 years or something?
Yeah, totally.
There's plenty of water in that well still.
Yeah.
I would like to see just straight up go all the way back to Adam West style Batman. Really fucking
Yes.
Do Adam West style Batman, but with, like... Christopher Nolan style directing.
Like, it's trying to take itself seriously, but then you have, you know, those obnoxious those like cartoon oversized cartoon bombs, like
yes.
And you have the whack and the kapow, yes,
the onomatopoeia.
Like actually just a graphic that comes on the screen.
Yeah,
pow. Someone should just edit the Nolan trilogy with all the sound.
That would be fantastic. I would watch that'd the be show so good.
That would sell.
Oh, that would sell totally like sell.
Gangbusters.
Oh yeah.
Oh man, that'd be so great.
Mm.
So, yeah. Have you guys seen the cast and crew announcements for Dune? It's been nuts.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people get brought on for this.
So, firstly, it's directed by Denis Villeneuve, the guy who did Sicario, he did Arrival, and he did Blade Runner 2049. This guy is quickly becoming one of my favorite directors of all time. I've loved everything I've seen by him. But then on top of that, this cast is absolutely insane. Oh, and Denis Villeneuve is also helping with the screenplay. I forgot to mention.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, this cast, man. You have Jason Momoa, you got Timothy Chalamet, Rebecca Ferguson, Josh Brolin, Zendaya, Oscar Isaac, Dave Bautista, Javier Bardem, Stellan Skarsgård, David Dastmalchian, and Charlotte Rampling.
Did they just, like, pick, like, hey, you guys have been in some nerdy shit over the past couple years. You want to come do Dune?
Yeah, I guess so, man. And if you don't recognize any of those names, Stellan Skarsgård is, he was in Thor. He played Jane's professor partner guy in the first two Thor movies.
He's Alexander Skarsgård's dad.
Yeah, that too. Charlotte Rampling was the psychologist lady in Dexter. And it's in the later seasons. And David Dastmalchian, he played he was an Ant-Man, that Russian hacker guy friend they have in that little group with T.I. and the third guy, and what the fuck's his name?
Now I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember his name either.
Oh my god.
Miles, what's his name?
Who?
In Ant-Man, the little group that he has, you have T.I., David Dastmalchian, and Michael Peña. That's yeah, all, Michael that's Peña.
Like,
yeah. Yeah, Michael Peña.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, this movie is looking to be something crazy, and I am very hyped for it.
I'm excited about it.
Oh yeah, very excited. So how about we move on to the main event, friends? The main event. Overwatch League.
Yee.
We're gonna be taking some time talking about Overwatch League tonight.
Yeah.
Along with the 3-3 meta.
Which so, I'm sure Mike has a lot of opinions about.
I don't know if you saw what Mike posted earlier, but Shanghai got their first win.
Yes.
Did they? Shit.
Yeah.
Finally.
About time. Who were they playing again? I didn't see the match.
Boston Uprising.
Oh, really? Dang. They beat Boston?
Yes. Wow.
Dang.
And, like, there were times I watched the match, like, a replay of it this afternoon, and there were times when it wasn't even close. Like, Shanghai was just freaking stomping on some maps.
Wow.
Man, that's awesome. I'm glad to see that they're finally getting their shit together.
I don't know if that's because, like, Boston went into that series with the wrong mindset. Like, oh, it's Shanghai, we don't have to try that hard.
I mean, maybe.
But, like, even in their first, like, even last week, Shanghai, they had a couple map wins. Like, they pushed their matches to 5 matches.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, like, they started pulling their shit together. It was just they needed that's to tweak awesome. Things a little bit.
I'm really glad to hear that.
Yeah.
That's really great. Like, they had no wins last season?
No. They didn't even have a map win last season.
No, they didn't? I thought they had a map one.
I think they did. It's just they literally...
Yeah.
Yeah, it fell apart after that.
Well, like they restructured everything, and then... so now they actually have, like, aside from Gregory, and this is kind of funny, Gamsu is their main tank now.
Yeah, that's right.
Gamsu was on the Boston Uprising, and he got traded in the offseason. So he really? The first win for them was against his former team.
Wow.
Well, that happened with that happened last year, last season. I think it was in between. I can't remember what the technical word for it is, but in between like seasons or whatever
stages.
Like, stages. That's the word I'm thinking of. Fusions got traded to the LA Gladiators and ended up playing against his former team as well and just completely stomped them. As a small note, before diving more into like the whole 3-3 discussion, Hero 30 has like started being teased by Blizzard.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of speculation that it's going to be a former a Renegade talent agent that's going to be a support in the same way that Zenyatta is kind of a DPS support.
Yes.
Really?
It's going to be, they think he's largely going to be a skillshot based DPS support that will likely counter the mechanical way that 3-3 works. So essentially,
that's kind of awesome.
The way that 3-3 kind of works, and Mike can kind of get into this a bit more, is basically one team is bunched up to shit and just swarms. So yeah. There's a lot of speculation that people think there's going to be some sort of damage tethering, depending on some part of this guy's kit is going to be damage tethering to where it shares with a group of people. And it likely would be short range so that you would have to disperse and essentially break up that composition in order to not have everyone take damage.
Right.
Interesting.
So if that's true, and bear in mind, it's a rumor based on, and it's a rumor based on kind of some of the reveal stuff, like some of the, like the flavor that they put out, you know, before Heroes get released, kind of hints at him being very capable at dealing with multiple targets at once. So I'm actually hoping that that's the case, that that's the direction that they go, because
yeah, we need something to break up this 3-3 meta that's currently going on.
Yeah. And that I think is kind of Blizzard's goal in general, is to everything, you know, there's going to be a meta that rises to the top no matter what you do. It's
of course.
Just, that's just the way game balance works.
But we've been on this 3-3 GOATS meta for so long now,
right,
that it's just getting boring.
It's so oppressive that they see, okay, we need to put in someone that has the ability to deal with this. We can't and don't want to rework anyone in order to do it because that ruins their identity as a character. Hero 30 is going to probably deal with that.
Right.
So it's a rumor based. It's a sort of informed rumor, but I'm really hoping that's the case.
Right.
I mean, during the Overwatch League matches, in between rounds or in the downtime, they've occasionally shown. It's like a scrolling letter, from someone in Talon. Mm-hmm. Talking about this, his name is apparently Baptiste.
It's Jean Baptiste. He's French.
Baptiste.
Yes.
So,
okay.
John the Baptist. Is that
what they got? Jean the Baptist.
But anyway, so Baptiste is mentioned in this letter, talking about, and this is where they get the ideas about how he's going to work. Is that it describes him as a medic that has a surprising. He has a surprisingly good shot for a medic.
Mm-hmm.
And okay. It goes on a little bit more about him, but
yeah, like there's lore and stuff that also informs the discussion as well.
Very neat.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the main thing why I've just been put off a little bit from watching Overwatch League, because it's all just 3-3 or GOATS, And
I mean, and
it's,
yeah,
it's boring. I don't want to watch that. Like, there's this highly upvoted post on our Overwatch.
Oh yeah,
on the Overwatch subreddit that said it was called Owl in a Nutshell.
Yes,
and the post is the Hang Zhao Spark beginning a match with a 4 DPS lineup, and then as soon as they see what the other team's running, that the other team's running goats, the Los mm-hmm. Angeles, the LA Valiant. They quickly go back to spawn and switch to goats, and the entire crowd just boos and goes, aww. They're like,
yeah, there were a few matches that happened. A few that I had seen last week as well, where, and I even audibly was upset. Like, yeah, you guys could have at least tried to make poke comp work against goats.
Like, there's ways to disrupt it without having to go goats, I think.
There is, but at the same time,
I understand it's the technically the most effective way.
It right is, now. It is, and because you think like even as I'm watching it, like it's not just the individual abilities; it's also the ults and stuff that need to come through. Like Earth Shatter is nearly irreplaceable. Grav is almost entirely irreplaceable. You need Lucio to disrupt Diva Bomb. You need Zenyatta to go with Trans when your team gets grabbed. Mm-hmm. And there were points in some of the matches where these ults just traded back and forth, where every time one Brigitte popped Rally, the other one did.
Exactly. And you'd see plenty of times where it was Zarya pops grab, so the other Zarya pops grab, and then right. Zen ult, your Zen, there's an ult, so your Zen ults.
Yeah. And that's it's entertaining to a point. Like after a certain point, it's just like, okay, now it's just different colors using the same comps and doing the same stuff.
The exact same tactics over and over again.
Right.
The only one that is really kind of disposable there is Diva Bomb, more or less.
Yeah, to an extent. The changes to Defense Matrix make her harder to use. But there's still a good amount of time where she compensates for Ryan needing to put down his barrier to do stuff because she still soaks up damage and all that
for
shit.
For sure. I'm just saying, like, typically, Diva Bomb isn't as much of a game changer or
not anymore.
As big of an issue as it used to be.
No, because, like, last year, you were seeing people, like getting these crazy, you know, 2, 3, 4... you know, 4 kills with Diva Bomb, and now mm-hmm. you're lucky if you see one.
Yeah, 1 or 2.
Poco's still doing it. Because he's Poco.
Yeah. Half the time, it's just like, I feel like they're using Diva Bomb, or the Self-Destructor, I should say, to get the mech back.
Yeah. Like, I'm low on health, I have ult, I want my mech back.
Yep, exactly. I mean, it's to be fair, that's a totally viable strategy. I've done it many times playing as D.Va.
I mean, there is one positive. I've noticed, so a lot of teams are trying new things now. Somewhere I saw someone point out that goats is basically all these teams know right now. It'll take some amount of time for them to figure out what can work against it and practice it enough that they feel confident doing it. But in the meantime, they all run goats because that's what they're comfortable with. It
right.
gives them the best chance. And also,
and
just because, well,
it's meta.
I can get into why 3-3 is so fucking oppressive, but
it's just overwhelming.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess the bright side is that you'll probably see more variation as time goes on, and even this week I started to notice a little bit more variation in comps.
There were mm-hmm. points last week, like I was watching one of the Houston matches, that one of the maps was on Ilios, which is the control maps. And, like, it was genuinely entertaining when they got to well, because goats doesn't work there.
Yeah, so, no, it does not.
No. So you saw both teams try different stuff, and you started seeing people, like players that you know are good on certain characters, actually go on to those. Like, it's weird seeing Linkser from Houston Outlaws be Brigitte all the time when you know he's a, like, top-tier Widow and McCree player.
World-class accuracy, and he's stuck playing Brigitte.
Right, and that's, like, that has to feel bad for the players, because you have to think, like, I got, like, they got so used to being, you know, this, you know, playing this character, playing this way in the last season, and now, because it's the most effective strategy, they have to rotate off, and it's like, there's nothing, like, there's no place for McCree in Goats, there's no place for, you know, all these other, for all these other off-picks in Goats.
Well, you are seeing some slightly more off picks. It's not just strictly Goats anymore, but it is still 3-3, 3 tanks, 3 healers.
Winston Goats is really like, common, and Sombra Goats is really common.
So yeah, Sombra and Winston.
That was one thing that I pointed out to you guys was, I think it was on another, it was in that Houston Outlaws match. Dante, I think. Didn't Dante get traded to them?
Yes.
So on Dorado, they were on attack. They ran a different comp than Goats. Dante went on Sombra, and he just completely shut down. I can't remember who they were against, but
Boston.
I think it was Boston. Like, he just completely shut down Boston. EMP, every time EMP went off, every single one on Boston died.
Yeah, because EMP is kind of a game changer.
Yeah, like, and I think, Mike, even you said, Jane had pointed out that EMP is basically the best ult in the game currently.
Yep.
It's up there for sure, if not the best.
Yeah. So, like, I want to see, like Mike said, I want to see more of that stuff happen. I want to see, you know, them starting to figure out, okay, we can, you know, swap these people out, and we can, you know, counter the way this person on this team happens to play this character.
Yeah, I would agree. I want to see just a little more. Let them have fun with it. Like, just let them have fun with the comps.
Yeah.
And like, for now, we're going to have to deal with it until maybe they start figuring stuff out. But the reason it's so common, and, well, the reason it's so reliable is because it allows you more mistakes. And in pro-level games, every little mistake matters so much more. So when you're playing a comp that allows you more mistakes, you just naturally have a more stable composition just by the fact that you're no longer going to be punished as hard. And the reason you're not punished as hard is because, and this is the essence of 3-3, the problem is that we've had healing creep for a while. Mm-hmm. And especially with Brigitte, her AoE healing stacked with Lucio, stacked with Zen, or, you know, I've seen Moira sometimes as well. Yeah. But you just have this massive amount of healing, and then to complement that, you have this massive health pool that if someone tries to focus you, you can, like, if you make a mistake, get out of position or something, you could just take the damage and then get healed up later after you disengage.
Yeah, and anything that would otherwise take out, like, a regular DPS character instantly, a tank can just absorb and then go back and get healed.
Yeah, and it's not even just the AoE healing. Like, Lucio has speed boost to move all those beefy targets around that don't have mobility.
Yeah, that's, so that's his utility. The healing helps accomplish the stacking of the healing, but, yeah, he is more of the... He controls when you engage or disengage.
Right. And I think the healing portion of it, like, it's not even just the healing. Like, the healing is almost an afterthought based on how large the health pools of what you're healing are. Like, the AoE healing is really good for, like, DPS or squishies that only have 200 health. But when you're trying to heal, like, 500-600 health, like, AoE healing isn't going to cut it at that point. So you look at people like Brigitte, who have damage that goes through barriers and or stuns and movement displacement, or Lucio that has utility in, you know, it creating sound barrier or moving people around with speed boost. You have Zenyatta that's throwing Discord orbs to make people take more damage, and it's all about trying to get people dead the fastest so that you don't need that healing. And if you do, you have, you know, you can amp up healing aura, you can throw armor pack, you can pop trans. There's all kinds of ways that you can bail out a tank that, like Mike said, you made a mistake, you got caught out, but there's ways to bail you out. And then everything just resets and you try again while abilities cool down.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's important to note that while Hero 30 might be aimed at disrupting this, we're not going to see it in Overwatch League for a while.
Well,
after it goes live, they typically hang back a patch.
I think one of the things they were trying to do with Overwatch League this season was to keep the league on the same patch that was on the live servers.
Yeah,
because it was too disruptive to play and get into a groove playing, you know, an entire stage with, you know, with heroes acting a certain way, and then, you know, you have to learn, like, oh yeah, there's a whole bunch of changes that happen and now this functions this way and blah blah blah, and you have a week to learn it, you better get cracking, because that's supposed to be their break in between stages, and instead it was spent learning all the new ins and outs of how this new patch works. So I don't think they're gonna do it like, oh yeah, in the middle of the week, everyone get used to this new patch, but I think they're gonna try to keep it more consistent as best they can.
Okay.
Whether or not they're going to throw an entirely new hero into the mix, even if they did, I can guarantee he won't get picked, because they have no idea how to play him and what his ins and outs are yet.
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean, is even after he goes live, you're still gonna wait to see him in professional play because they have to learn him, and then they're not gonna want to run him yet.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But yeah, and playing the game, not just Overwatch League, playing myself in games against GOATs is kind of fucking annoying at this point.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's just boring. Honestly, that's more than anything. Like, I love playing Rein. I'm a Rein main.
But you play with, like, you know, other DPS behind you that you're counting on to do DPS, not so that, you know, you can rush in with Zarya and D.Va.
Right.
Like, you have a certain way that you play, and it's kind of the way that I think they intended Rein to initially be played.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully 30 will shake things up enough on both levels, professional and amateur. Hopefully.
Yeah. Wasn't Brigitte meant to also shake things up, and she just got added to the meta?
She did, but then she got nerfed because she was too oppressive.
She was there to counter dive and tracers.
That's what it was, yeah.
Tracers dominating. Which... Remember fucking dive all fucking last season? That was...
Yeah.
I think back, and as much as I hate GOATs, I'm like, yeah, we did have dive for like a year and a half, so.
Yeah, we did.
And you can even still do that. Like it's almost a throwback. Like, oh man, they're going Winston D.Va. They're going Winston D.Va Lucio. They're going to try dive comp this time. This is new.
Nope, it's just Winston GOATs.
Yeah, it's just Winston GOATs, basically.
Alright, I think that about covers all our thoughts on the subject.
Yeah.
What do you say we get out of here, guys?
Okay. Sure.
Let's wrap this up.
Yeah. Right.
Thanks everybody for listening. We should have this up pretty shortly this time, so yeah.
Well, if you're hearing tuned. Tim say that, that means it's up.
Get upset. But yeah. Well, thanks for listening. Hope to see you on the next one. All right. Peace.
All right.
See ya.